Right, let's go. I'd like to welcome everybody to the South Jordan Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. We've got our full commission present this evening. We've got representatives from the city. We have a guest representative filling in for Mr. Simonson, I suppose.
You have the B team in me, sorry.
Okay.
He's off in the mountains.
Sounds wonderful. Is that why he declined doing training with us this evening?
Probably, and he doesn't trust me to do it, so.
All right, I'll make sure that I'll tell him that you said that. All right, and we'd like to welcome either an applicant or a citizen who has joined us this evening. Welcome. And for those that have joined us online, same to you. We always appreciate participation from both participants and citizens of our community. So we will get down to business. I don't think it'll be a long meeting this evening. Our first item is to approve our agenda as published for this evening. Any discussion?
I'll move that we approve the agenda as published.
Thank you, Commissioner Bevins. I will second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Our next item is to approve our minutes from the April 9th Planning Commission meeting. Has everybody had an opportunity to review those comments?
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the minutes from our previous meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Catmull. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, staff, business for us this evening.
No extra business, just the items, two items on the agenda.
Okay, Planning Commission, I did email Mr. Schaefermeyer about the things that we discussed last time. I only did it a couple of days ago, and he has not had an opportunity to respond. So as soon as I hear an okay on what we discussed for a training topic, I'll generate a Google Doc that we can populate with items that we would like to be a part of our governing document for this particular body, as well as items that we would like to visit for relevancy for this commission to review, whether or not it's needed, that we can discuss with City Council when we have a joint session later in the year. That was it from me. Anything else from commissioners?
Ms. Bevins? Mr. Schindler, if you would just pass on appreciation to Mr. Schaefermeyer. His clarifying email after the meeting last week was much appreciated, so that was very helpful.
Mr. Wimmer, going this way, please.
So we got email from city staff regarding know before security training. I know it's directed because we're part of city employee email distribution, but are we as an appointed body required to do that, or should we just start ignore that that email?
I've already told two of them, yes, you are required because you have city emails and city needs to have you do the cyber training too, because emails that you might get can still infect the city's servers. So,
and because we have Mr. Luce here, without count towards our hour of additional training.
I'm gonna count it.
Huh?
I'll count it.
Okay.
Yeah, so just include it in.
Does it matter if you count it? Will it count on Mr. Schaefermeyer's paper?
I will defend it.
All right.
Okay.
I'll tell it because it's relevant to the city operations. The training, I mean, I was in the negotiations when that bill was written, and the training is generally for land use, but also for general governance too, to some amount of, there's certain, if I remember right, isn't there like an hour every year of, it's a very specific thing. The other three, it can be, even your meetings count for an hour over a period of the year, so.
Okay. No, I just wanted to make sure before I started doing something I maybe didn't have to do.
Greg will let Steve know that I said I'd defend it, right?
Sure.
There we go.
Greg also let us know that we may all be assigned to a certain team in the city, and we've been making them lose their competition. So,
I have no idea.
Planning Commission, we're going to get on that.
Do I have a blood relative on that team that's losing?
I think your blood relative is more on the winning side.
Okay, good. That's all I wanted to know.
Training is not a team sport. Just get the training done. I love the competition people invent just to do what they're supposed to.
All right, Mr. Bishop, anything?
No.
Okay. Thanks. All right, let's move on then. We have two items this evening, one under administrative and one under legislative. For both, we will have city staff, it looks like Greg for both, will present us with the staff report. After each, we'll have an opportunity for the public to comment, and then I think that's all we need to do. If you would like to address the commission, though, during public comment on either of those, we would just invite you to come to the podium, state your name and where you reside for our records, and you'll have 3 minutes to present whatever evidence that you've brought this evening. So our first item, H1, Daybreak Village 15, Plat 2, Preliminary Subdivision. Greg has our staff report.
Okay, thank you. Yes, this is the first one tonight. Is Daybreak Village 15, Plat 2 Subdivision, and as you can see on the map on the screen there where it's located. Just to the west of that, in the vacant area, was the Village 15, Plat 1 Subdivision, which is going to be their model home village for the West Side Villages for the next few years anyway. The area of the subdivision is 6.335 acres and contains 32 residential lots and two park lots and other rights of way. The residential density of this proposal is 5 units per acre is the gross density and 8.4 units per acre for the net density. And the proposed lot sizes range from 2,625 square feet to 9,161 square feet, the average being just a little over 5,154 square feet. And also, as I put in the staff report, that it appears that all of the lots will be for single-family detached homes. There didn't appear to be any townhomes in this subdivision. The subdivision meets all the requirements of the Daybreak Community Structure Plan, the PC zone, and all state and other local ordinances regarding subdivisions. So, staff is recommending that you approve the subdivision tonight, preliminary plat.
Thank you. Commissioners, questions for staff? Is the applicant present this evening?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Check the online, maybe, see if potential.
Can we see online, Mr. Day, if we potentially have anybody participating in that format?
No.
All right.
Mr. Warnick has canceled a few meetings this week on us, so I'm wondering maybe he's out of town. I don't know, but he's usually here. So.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to open up this item to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we'd invite you to come to the podium. Okay, I'm getting indication that that's a no. So I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, any discussion, concerns, questions we need answered? I'm ready for a motion then.
Can we think of a reason not to do it? Just give us an excuse, yeah, just for fun.
The applicant wasn't here, so you went. You can table it.
I think we should adopt that as our part of our governing rules if we're going to start doing that, just to make it real clear to applicants. Mm-hmm. But maybe before doing that,
you show up or else.
So you can put that in the Google Doc if you feel strongly.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion, please.
Please.
I move that based on the staff report that we, the Planning Commission, approve project number PLPP20240006, subject to the following, that all South Jordan City requirements are met prior to recording the plan.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Gedge. We have a motion. Any discussion? All right, I'll second that motion. Ms. Crookston? Oh, my goodness, we have another. I only saw, I'm so sorry.
No, you're okay. Welcome all new evening. Faces tonight. Commissioner Gedge.
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis.
Yes.
Commissioner Wimmer.
Aye.
Commissioner Catmull.
Aye.
Commissioner Bevins.
Yes.
And Commissioner Bishop.
Yes.
Okay. This item passes 6-0, and now we're going to move into our legislative public hearings. Just as a reminder, on these items, we are a recommending body, and we will make a recommendation to City Council, who will be the final decider on this particular item. Our one item is a text amendment amending City Code 1708.010 and 1713.030 for accessory living unit floating zone. And Greg has our staff report.
Okay, it was probably, was it a month ago that most of the commission were part of a discussion regarding this text amendment. It's coming to you tonight as for recommendation to the City Council. And if approved, the proposed text amendment would allow guest houses in all single-family zones on conforming conforming lots that are at least 14,520 square feet, which is a third of an acre. Currently, guest houses are only allowed in the A5, A1, and R1.8 zones with that same area requirement. If there's any concern about, will that increase the number of ADUs that we have in the neighborhood? Likely not. It just gives another option for lots to a third of an acre for those owners to either have basement, you know, internal ADUs or a guest house. They can't have both. They can only allow one ADU. So we feel that it's, staff feels that it won't increase the number. It'll just give a better option or another option to the to property owners with a third of an acre. And we have had quite a few people, property owners, asking us, "Why can't I do it in my zone? And so my lot's big." So we will trying to accommodate that to make it just more fair along the lines of size of property. The exterior ADUs, the detached ADUs. We do have more. The city has more to say, and when it comes to what they look like and things like that, than we would with the basement ADU anyway, because basement ADUs are pretty much required to be allowed regardless of whether it's, you know, the property size is down to 6,000 square feet then, so, and they could still have the same amount of cars parked on the lot, whereas we have a third acre lot, it's more likely that it'll be less crowded with automobiles being parked in driveways and things like that. So we think it's a good move. The other things that are being changed in the code are basically the ones that the state has updated some of its definitions of IADUs. And so we took certain things out of our code that we can no longer put in there. So mostly about the dividing of the house in that kind of language we can't use anymore. So staff is recommending that you make the recommendation to approve to the city council. They have also had the discussion of this, and from what I heard, that they were supportive of the change.
Thank you. I did have one question. With the removal of the internal wall, does that mean an ADU could have the renter as well as the primary home owner share the same kitchen and they're effectively renting a room? Or does there have to be a second kitchen that is designated as the ADU kitchen or bathroom or?
Well, we still have the definition of the ADU is a separate kitchen and bathroom.
Okay.
And that's it on that.
Just does not have to
be. We can't imagine anybody would want to share. We don't know why that was taken out. But our main, that's just one of the criteria that we don't look at anymore. But we also, so we have new questions to ask each time we see in the basement a kitchen or a bathroom. Then we ask them, what is your intent? Do you intend to rent this out? And if they say yes, we say, well, then you need to apply for an internal ADU. If they say no, then we, as Steve has told us, we stamp the heck out of the plans that if they start renting it, they'll be in violation of our city code and they'll have to get an ADU permit. So
I know this is asking you to speculate, but why do you think the state removed that particular requirement? Because like you just said, you don't imagine people would want to share their kitchen. I wouldn't imagine renting part of my home without a wall.
Yeah, right. That's what
I can answer without speculating.
Oh, good. Let's go.
I've been part of these negotiations for several years. And the issue is one of impact. So they first think about ADUs as impact. So whether you have six people, like my house was before my 3-year-old kids moved out, or three people, and then we rent to three people in the basement, the impact to the system is the same, right? Whether it's one family or two. And so that's where they start with the ADUs, and that's why you get a lot of these changes where we don't care how they build the inside of the house.
Now, to be its own ADU, it does have to have its own kitchen, bathroom. To rent it out and get a permit through our system, has to have that. The internal wall became a discussion because a lot of cities were requiring that you couldn't separate the top and the bottom or the side and the side with hard walls. You had to have a door or something in between. So you just started, which would be like more like building it like a duplex, essentially. Either a up-down duplex or side-by-side. And so those walls became funny things in the negotiations. And so we don't regulate how they do the inside, other than if you say you're having ADU, you do have to be able to provide them their space and rent it out to them that way. And we won't address it separate. The only thing we can require is the extra parking space. We used to require, 35%? It had to be less than 35% of the primary dwelling. You can't do that anymore. It had to have all these rules. The other thing we can require is that it's owner occupied. You used to require that the owner occupy the bigger dwelling in the house. Now they could live in, you know, the mother-in-law apartment and rent out the rest of the house if they want. And that's all to give greater flexibility to a property owner with their bundle of six of property. So that's why funny things happened. With walls and kitchens and bathrooms and stuff, is to give that flexibility for people to use their homes the way they want when the impact, essentially, other than parking kind of, that's why we can require an extra designated spot when the impact's going to be the same.
Are there limits on how many people may reside within an ADU? For some reason, I thought there were.
There are limits on how many unrelated people can reside in a residence, and once you split into two, yes, you could. I mean, legally, is it four less unrelated people can live in a residential unit? Mm-hmm. Enforcing and placing that's really difficult, but that becomes one of those that it doesn't become like a college apartment, so to speak. You'll see in cities like Cedar City and other ones with a college town, you'll see it's like six or less. So someone could turn their basement and have six college students living there, but they couldn't like turn the whole house into 16.
They call those 16. Half frats.
Yeah, there you go.
Using that example, four unrelated people in your basement, let's say, how does that avoid being multiple ADUs? Is it because they all agreed to share and there's one ADU that they reside in?
An ADU is more structural mm-hmm. than it is by the people.
Okay.
So we define ADU, and correct me, Greg, you've got it out there. We basically define it as a space with a kitchen, a bathroom, and then bedroom space. I don't think we define living room really in depth.
I don't even know if we define includes a kitchen and a bathroom,
yeah.
Period. Doesn't.
So somebody could sublet to three different people, the same space,
mm-hmm.
four. Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and we probably have some of that, like especially along near a track station, like if you lived in Glenmore, because remember this doesn't apply to the Daybreak subdivision,
sure.
or community. So let's take Glenmore where this would apply to. Yeah, easily you could have three people going to the U that jump on tracks every day because you're right there by that track station.
Thank you. Commissioners, questions?
I have a couple questions. You talked about it has to be owner-occupied. Are there any provisions in our city code that would allow, like, someone to turn their home into an LLC and rent both units as long-term instead of short-term?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay. And then I know the definition says an ADU is the detached one, is a detached from the primary dwelling that includes a kitchen and a bathroom. So if someone was building a pool house that included a kitchen and a bathroom, would that be considered an ADU, even though there are no
In this
spaces?
Case, yeah, we would.
I would say it could be if they come in and ask for an ADU. If they intend to use it as an ADU and rent it, and they come and go through the process, yes. If they just build a pool house and next to their swimming pool and it has a kitchen and bathroom in it.
The way we would do it, though, is to, if they have the kitchen and the bathroom, and we would consider it an ADU as we review it, but we'd ask that same question that we would do to the basement. Do you intend to rent this out? as an accessory dwelling unit. And if they say no, then we stamp it and say, you know, that if it ever is, you know, in violation of the city code, and you'll have to apply for a permit then. And normally the pool houses and stuff are going to be smaller than the exterior ADUs usually are. And because we do limit those, though, to 1,500 square feet or 35% of the floor area, living area in the main dwelling. But usually pool houses are a little bit smaller and they have fewer rooms. They might have the kitchen and the bathroom and maybe one other room. But we have seen some come in with, they even labeled it as a bedroom, so.
Okay. The thing about it, unless they intend to have a dwelling in there and rent it, then it's just a pool house. Could look the same. Yeah. It's their intent and use of it.
Does the city require like a second kitchen cabinet to be recorded with the county if they do not intend to rent it, if the plans come in?
Not that I know of.
Never okay. Required.
Okay.
Why are we letting big government tell us how to run our government? Man, the state changes their regulations, and now we have to change ours. Can't we file a frivolous and useless lawsuit, waste lots of money and time, and then change it anyway? Just for fun.
I mean, if the council wanted to, it's job security for my shop, frivolous lawsuits, but.
I'm not going to do that. I'm just floating it for you guys if you guys want to run with that idea.
We do several of these after every legislative session. Well,
this, compliance. This one isn't based on any legislation this year. This one is really us looking and the planning looking and say, why should someone on a big enough lot for a guest house, but in a zone that's smaller, so you have a big lot and a zone in a higher density zone, and so you want a guest house just like the guy a couple streets over in a lower density zone with the same size lot or smaller has it, why can't these two have the same thing because they're lot size. The internal discussion from past years, yes, we made those changes. And very frankly, a lot of these line outs and stuff were things that changed a few years ago, not this year, and we're just catching up. But the fundamental thing we're doing with guest house, that's our planning, recognizing, hey, this might be a better way to do things. Did I explain that well?
Yeah, we do have more control over the exterior ADUs and how big they are and so forth than we do on internal ADUs.
State doesn't preempt us at all on external ADUs, only internal.
Ms. Bevins had another question.
Sorry, I have one more question. You mentioned that it doesn't apply to daybreak, because daybreak's its own thing, but if an HOA has rules that govern no ADUs or no guest houses, because this is state law and state code, does that supersede their HOA if it predates the state law? Or can an HOA still deny having ADUs and guest house in their HOA?
The HOA's attorney should opine on that. And the reason I say that is in the state law, so the reason it doesn't apply to daybreak, it doesn't have anything to do with their CC&Rs.
Yeah.
It's because daybreak isn't primarily residential. It's a true mixed-use commercial with yeah. off that.
Daybreak's a whole
so that's the reason thing. The state law doesn't apply, in our opinion. The reason I answered it the way I did is the legislature did put into the state law with ADUs that it superseded any previous CC&Rs that would restrict it. However, we have something in the Constitution called the Contracts Clause. And generally, when state laws try to supersede a contract, unless it has to do with discriminating against a protected class, like let's say there were HOAs in the past that said no people of whatever ethnicity. Well, that would be struck down by the Constitution Equal Protection Clause. So that would be rendered invalid. But unless it's something like that, the contract clause would supersede the state legislation and saying parties can contract. For example, if the state said, hey, you have to allow the new state flag in every HOA. Well, there's a lot of HOAs that don't allow any flag but the U.S. flag, right? People hang BYU or UVU or whatever, and they're told to take them down. My brother-in-law has feelings about that. And so from that standpoint, you can contract a lot of your civil rights, freedom of speech, freedom, different freedoms, in an HOA contract, and people do it all the time. And so I think there's a legal dispute whether the HOA could
claim that the contract's provision supersedes the Constitution, or supersedes, sorry, the HOA. But someone has to litigate that, and since we don't advise HOAs, that's up to them to figure out. It's a good question. We had long debates about it.
Mr. Kimmel?
Yeah, perhaps the least important question. I noticed guest houses being capitalized. What's behind that? And then I have a more thoughtful question after that.
Steve, that's his preference when in the his grammar preference is to capitalize guest houses. And on that, it's okay. I don't know. He must be looking at some form of a book that tells him that should be capital. They should be capitalized. That's the only reason.
Good technical writing. All proper names and titles should be capitalized. Mm. We've had long discussions about that too.
Okay. All right. Then I think the other thing is when we talk about impact. I know. I realize it's not going to have an impact on, like, the number of people. We anticipate there'll be no negligible impact on the number of people, the density, and so forth. It does feel like it. The impact it tends to have is it eases the restrictions that people feel. I mean, like, they're already going to do a lot of these things and have done these things. It's just that when they come to get an official building permit or something like that, then that's where it seems to be running and causing friction. And so it feels like, am I understanding this correctly, is that by making these changes, we're making it easier to get a building permit for more projects that would otherwise probably would otherwise already happen, just probably perhaps without a building permit. I know you can't tell what's been done without a building permit.
Yeah, I don't know how many guest houses have been built without a permit, and there's probably, well, I know at least one that we're having issue with, and
he's being prosecuted.
And he's being prosecuted, so it's.
But this isn't a guest house; it's a tough shed.
It's true. It barely qualifies as a
guest house.
Should
have put in a tough kitchen.
He did.
But we don't know offhand how many are out there, and we have to wait till a neighbor complains, which did with this one person. But we do know that several have, you know, inquired about why can't we have one in our yard? We have the same size property as, you know, a large lot, and it seems that there's plenty of room. What's the deal here? So we decided that it's a good idea to give their residents more options.
And it seems like that would discourage them from actually getting a building permit if that was a problem, if they did have an idea for a project game and all that. I'm trying to understand it because, like, having recently done a building permit and a project, it's like, what would have I done if it felt like a technicality? And
you did a project and didn't come before this commission.
I did get a building permit, and I did get very pointed feedback on how to make it better, so it was good. So anyway, okay, so that helps me understand. Okay, thank you.
I'm a little hurt. Moving on. Mr. Gedge?
So in our February training that we had, where Mr. Simonson explained to us administrative versus legislative items, he brought up a reference where the city of Draper, I believe, got in trouble with a legislative item similar to this on a text amendment. Where it favored the city council and body who made that recommendation. My question, I guess, for this is, before I comment any further, is I am in one of the zones that I will take advantage of this change in text because I live in an R2.5 zone. I have a large acre, and so this would imply. So should I not be participating, I guess, in this item because of that training that we had in February, and I guess anybody else on the commission who might be in a similar circumstance, before we make a recommendation to city council?
If you had an obligation to disclose, you just did. Once disclosed, you can vote on any item.
Okay, great.
Do we all need to disclose then? I live on a third acre in an area that I think is zone 2.5.
Yeah, I don't think it's an obligation that you have. That's why I said if you have an obligation, then you did. Because you know, it require a chain of events, right? It's not like you're the one who initiated this so that you can do it. This was happening with staff. You may or may not choose to do it at some point in the future. Just like if the city council made many different changes to the code, we just changed a business licensing code. And if we did that for home occupations and sometime in the future, you guys could take advantage of that. You know what I mean? It's pretty tenuous unless you're like the applicant. Okay. Or you're the one behind lobbying for the change, which, to the best of my knowledge, that's not the case. And
I guess the other reason is you just mentioned the city is going or prosecuting someone who might maybe want to reference this change to code.
And it won't work in that case.
Oh, it won't apply. Okay. I just want to make sure I'm protecting the city.
Yeah.
Just because I was cleaning my garage this weekend, I found when I was on a commission of another municipality, something similar. And so I wanted to make sure that just everything is on the up and up so I don't get a notice that I have to appear before city council or a judicial body to explain my actions. So.
That's happened, huh?
Yeah. So, hey, I'm a little gun shy. So.
Can I just make a blanket disclosure that I do, in fact, own a house in South Jordan and some of these decisions may impact me at some point?
There
you
go.
But I'm being serious. I mean, it says right here, A5A1 R1.8. I live in R2.5 and I have more than a third of an acre. So I know you're trying to be funny, but I'm trying to be serious here.
It's good. You're better than me.
You sounded like you might have more after what you just stated.
No, it's just I'm trying to be serious, holding to my duty that I've sworn to be a commission member. This is my 12th year as a planning commission member in this state. So I don't appreciate the comments making potential light of what I've said.
Oh, I meant to acknowledge.
So I have potential items for our commission rules of orders once those will be proposed. So that I'll end there.
Okay.
But as chair, I defer to you to hopefully conduct that more appropriately.
Okay, Mr. Bishop.
I've got no comment. This has been a very enlightening conversation with all the background information. So, thank you.
Okay. All right, at this time, we will open up the floor to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we'd invite you to come to the podium. No, but that's not you, right? No. If you've joined us online, we will extend the same opportunity to speak during public comment. We would just ask that you turn on your camera and give us a wave if you would like to address the commission on this particular item. Mr. Day, are you seeing any indication? Okay. I'm going to close public comment and bring this back to the commission then. Again, we are a recommending body. What we decide this evening will be forwarded to City Council, who would have an opportunity to discuss this as well. I do appreciate staff, the information. Greg, I appreciate you forwarding the information to Laurel and myself since we missed the meeting where it was presented so that we had an opportunity to review it. And Mr. Losa, I'm glad that you were here this evening so that you could tell us the reasoning behind it without having to speculate. So, commission, any further discussion on this? Okay. I think the one item that I do appreciate that Greg pointed out is that this will allow it to be more evenly applied to people that have lots of a certain size. I will be curious if there's an increase in what we see, although I suppose as long as they meet the metrics set up by the city, we will not be seeing a lot of these.
Yeah, you'd only be seeing them if they want to exceed the size. Or and a lot of times, people will want to put, on the second floor of an accessory garage and so forth. And sometimes those will be coming to you because of their size, not because they also going to have an accessory dwelling unit in it. But there's a chance that you may see some of them, but if they keep it to what we require in the code that they, it's 1,500 square feet or 35% of the main dwelling, whichever is less, and keep it that way, then yeah, it's approved by staff at that point.
Will we ever see an internal one moving forward now that they've removed the 35% and 1,500?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. You wouldn't see any of those because they pretty much, there's And you know, we would have to say staff would deny it if say they had a lot that was under 6,000 square feet. We would deny that ourselves. And if they wanted to appeal, they'd have to appeal to the hearing officer, but they would have no grounds for the appeal. I mean, it's 6,000 square feet, too bad. So.
Okay. All right, we're gonna start at this end. Mr. Bishop, any further discussion?
No.
Questions? Mr. Gedge, Catmull? Okay, I'm ready for a motion, please.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion, please.
Please.
I move based on the staff report and discussion this evening, I move that we, the Planning Commission, recommend to the City Council that they approve Ordinance Number 2024-10, amending City Code Section 17-08-010 and 17-130.030. Okay. As presented in our staff report.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion on that motion? Okay, I'll second it. Ms. Crookston.
Commissioner Gedge.
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis.
Yes.
Commissioner Wimmer.
Aye.
Commissioner Catmull.
Aye.
Commissioner Bevins.
Aye.
And Commissioner Bishop.
Yes.
Okay, this item will move forward with a positive recommendation of 6-0 to City Council, who will hear this soon.
I believe it's on the May 7th meeting.
Okay, sounds good. All right, any other business for us this evening?
Well, I do not know if there's going to be anything on the next agenda at this point, but it's because I hadn't looked to see, but I have nothing on it because nothing coming forward. And I believe there might be one item that's still, Demir has a couple of items that he's been waiting to bring forward, but they haven't submitted all what they needed. So I can't promise you that it'll be an empty meeting, but it probably wouldn't be more than one or two items again.
It's also an extra week out, right, with the fifth Tuesday.
Right.
All right, commissioners, any expectation of missing next month in May, just so that we can coordinate a quorum? Wonderful. Then, depending on how staff directs us, we'll see you on May 14th. Was there anything else? Commissioners, anything else? Okay, I'll send out the documents I talked about at the beginning of the meeting once I hear from Mr. Schaefermeyer. I will move that we adjourn this evening.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you.